Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 6, text number 36. Yatrasmatadakshasapha Grihito yaksmanodurat Mukta Kribisat Sajo Nijibuya Padodayam Yatra. Where? Snatva. Taking bath. Daksha Sapat. Because of the curse of Prajapati. Daksha. Grihita, seized. Yakshmana, by consumptive lung disease. Udurat, the king of stars, the moon. Vimuktaha, free. Pirvishat, from his sinful reaction. Sadhya, immediately. Vejhe, he assumed. Bhuya, once again. Kala, of his phases. Uriyam, the increasing. Translation. Once the moon was afflicted with consumption because of the curse of Daksha. But just by taking bath at Prabhasa Kshetra, the moon was immediately freed from his sinful reaction and again resumed the waxing of his phases. So, who is speaking? Krishna. Krishna is, who is he speaking to? Good guess. That's another good guess. Huh? That's another good guess. Okay. There's one more lot of personalities involved in this saga. The Yadus. And the penny drops. So, Krishna, because I'll just read the previous verse 34 and 35. Krishna said, our dynasty has been cursed by the Brahmanas. Such a curse is impossible to counteract, and thus great disturbances are appearing everywhere around us. My dear respected elders, we must not remain any longer in this place if we wish to keep our lives intact. Let us go this very day to the most pious place, Prabhasa. We have no time to delay. And that brought us to today's verse, where Krishna begins to glorify the benefits of performing sacrifice at the place of Prabhasetra. So, text number 37-38. Vaya cha tasminna aplutya thalapayitva pitrin sudran pachoyit svasija viparan hana kunna vatandasa teshu dhanani patreshu shariyopta mahantivai vrijjanani tarishyamo dhaner nobhir hivannavam. By bathing at Prabhasa-kshetra, by offering sacrifice there to placate the forefathers and demigods, by feeding the worshipable brahmanas with various delicious foodstuffs, and by bestowing opulent gifts upon them as the most suitable candidates for charity, we will certainly cross over these terrible dangers through such acts of charity, just as one can cross over a great ocean in a suitable boat. Text 39. Sri Sukhuruvacha Ivam Bhagavatadishta Yadavakuru Nandana gandham kritati yastetam shandan sama yujujam. Sukadeva Goswami said, O favorite son of the Kurus, thus advised by the personality of Godhead, the Yadavas made up their minds to go to that holy place, Prabhasetra, and thus yoke their horses to their chariots. My dear King Uddhava was a constantly faithful follower of Lord Krishna. So we see now that Uddhava is being introduced. My dear King, Uddhava was a constantly faithful follower of Lord Krishna. Upon seeing the imminent departure of the Yadavas, hearing from them of the Lord's instructions, and taking note of the fearful omens, he approached the personality of Godhead in a private place. He bowed down with his head at the lotus feet of the Supreme Controller of the universe, and with folded hands addressed him as follows. Purport. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, there cannot be any actual disturbance in the Lord's own abode. The great disasters apparently occurring in Dwarka were an external show created by the Lord to facilitate his pastimes. We can understand the pastimes of Krishna only by hearing from the recognized acharyas. Lord Krishna is not a mundane historical figure, and his activities cannot be confined within the tiny limits of material logic. Lord Krishna's pastimes are an exhibition of his achincha shakti, or inconceivable potency, which functions according to higher spiritual laws, unknown to the blind conditioned souls and their petty material logic. So, although there's a purport there, I'll read the next verse because I want to discuss something important which is discussed in this verse. Shri Uravaru Vacha Deva Devesha Yogesha Panyushavali Kirtana Sam Hritya Tatkulam Nunam Lokam Santyakshate Bhava Vipra Sapam Samatopi Pachahanna Yadishvaraha. Sri Uddhava said, O my Lord, O Supreme God among all the demigods, real piety is invoked simply by hearing and chanting your transcendental glories. My Lord, it appears that you will now withdraw your dynasty, and thus you yourself will finally give up your pastimes within this universe. You are the supreme controller and the master of all mystic power. But although you are fully capable of counteracting the Brahmana's curse against your dynasty, you are not doing so, and your disappearance is imminent. Purport. As previously mentioned, Krishna's own dynasty can never be destroyed. Therefore, the word Samhritya means that Krishna was taking the Yadavas with him as he left this material world. However, in the eyes of ordinary, unenlightened persons, the withdrawal of the Yadu dynasty appears to be its destruction. Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur has very nicely explained the statement of Uddhava as follows. Krishna is addressed as Devadeva, or the Supreme God among the gods, because he expertly solved all the problems of the demigods by his incarnation within the universe. The Lord rid the world of the demons and firmly established both his devotees and religious principles. Lord Krishna is addressed here as Yogesha because he not only performed work on behalf of the demigods but also revealed his beautiful transcendental form full of transcendental qualities and ecstasies for the pleasure of his pure devotees. Krishna is called Punyashravana Kirtana because when, by his internal mystic potency, he exhibited his human-like activities, the Lord stimulated the writing of innumerable Vedic scriptures about his pastimes. Thus persons who would be born in the future like ourselves would be able to hear and chant about the Lord's activities and also go back home, back to Godhead. Having ensured the transcendental bliss and liberation of all his devotees, even those who would be born in the future, Krishna decided the time had come for him to leave this material universe. Uddhava could understand, that's Nin's patrons. Uddhava could understand the Lord's desire and said to Krishna, You have instructed the Yadavas to counteract the Brahmana's curse by taking bath at Prabhashetra, but how could mere bathing in a holy place be of greater value than seeing you, the personality of Godhead, face to face? Since the Yadavas are always seeing your transcendental form, and since you are the Supreme Lord, what is the use of their taking bath in a so-called holy place? Therefore, you obviously have some other purpose. If you actually wanted to counteract the curse, you would simply say, let this curse not act, and the curse would immediately be neutralized. Therefore, you must be preparing to leave this universe, and that is why you have not counteracted the curse. So, in this chapter, Krishna first spoke to the demigods. And then, after that, Krishna instructed the Yadus to go to Prabhashetra. And then, after that, Krishna speaks to Uddhava. If we actually look in the summary, so just to get a bearing on the story, because the story spreads over 30 chapters, and it's, you know, it's very easy to lose the story line. In the summary, it says that this chapter describes how Brahma and other demigods, after offering prayers to Lord Sri Krishna, requested the Lord to return to his own abode, and how Uddhava, anticipating separation from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was very distressed and prayed to Sri Krishna that he might accompany him on his return to that abode. So then it describes the different prayers of the demigods. Now then it says, after describing the prayers of the demigods, when Brahma prayed to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna for the deliverance of himself and all the other demigods, Sri Krishna revealed in his reply that after the destruction of the Yadu dynasty, he would return to his own abode. So that was the first thing. So he spoke to the demigods, and then he replied to them, revealing to them that he was going to return to his own abode. Then it states, observing terrible disturbances indicating the imminent destruction of the world, Lord Krishna called together the wise members of the Yadu dynasty and reminded them of the Brahmana's curse. The Lord convinced them to go to Prabhashatirtha, where they could save themselves by the performance of ritual, bathing, charity and so on. The Yadus, in observance to Lord Krishna's desire, prepared to journey to Prabhas. Now the third event is that upon seeing and hearing the Lord's conversation with the Yadu dynasty, Uddhava approached Lord Krishna in a secluded place, offered him full obeisances, and with folded hands expressed his inability to tolerate separation from the Lord. He begged Krishna to carry him to his own abode. And then we have Krishna's reply to Arjuna, which takes up chapters 7 to 29. Now, in verse 40 to 41, which we read today, it describes that Uddhava, upon seeing the imminent departure of the Yadavas, hearing from them of the Lord's instructions and taking note of the fearful omens, he approached the personality of Godhead. So there it also describes the order that, and also in this purport that we read today, it says that Uddhava could understand the Lord's desire and said to Krishna, "You have instructed the Yadavas to counteract the Brahmana's curse by taking bath of Prabhashetra." So far, that is the order. But the reason I'm bringing that up is because I think there may be a little confusion when we get to chapter 30. So in the summary of chapter 30, it says that this chapter discusses the destruction of the Yadu dynasty in connection with the winding up of the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After Sri Uddhava left for Bhadarikasram, Lord Sri Krishna, taking note of many bad omens, advised the Yadavas to abandon Dwarka and go to Prabhas on the bank of the Sarasvati to perform Swasti Ayana and other rituals for counteracting bad fortune. So there it actually states it in the summary anyway, it actually states the order in a different order. See? So it's actually saying that first, after he spoke to the demigods, then he must have spoken to Uddhava, because then Uddhava left, then he spoke to the residents of Dwarka, the others. So it's actually different. So that's what it says in the summary, although it doesn't say it in any of the purports to the chapter 30. So the first verse of chapter 30 says, King Parikit said, he asked a question, after the great devotee Uddhava left for the forest, what did the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the protector of all living beings, do in the city of Dwarka? And after his own dynasty met destruction from the curse of the Brahmanas, how could the best of the Yadus give up his body, the dearmost object of all eyes? So Uddhava's asking, King Parikshit's asking that after Uddhava left, what did Krishna do? So then Sukadeva Goswami begins to reply, and he repeats what we just heard here, that he instructed the Yadus and the Yadus went to Prabhashetra. So does anyone have any theories or comments? My understanding of that is that, as is stated here very clearly, that Krishna spoke to the demigods, he spoke to the Yadus, and then he spoke to Uddhava. And then Uddhava left. Whereas in chapter 30, in the summary, it appears that when recounting the summary of what's stated by Sukadeva Goswami, they're including Sukadeva Goswami's discussion of to the Yadus as what Krishna did after Uddhava left. But my understanding is that Sukadeva Goswami is actually beginning to tell what Krishna did after Uddhava left, and he's beginning with that part of the story, but that's not necessarily that part of the story, never necessarily happened before Uddhava left, after he left, you understand? So it's like he's recounting in order to tell what Krishna did after Uddhava left. He begins the story by repeating a little bit of what he did before Uddhava left. Unless there's some. Uddhava Gita?
So, Uddhava died. Krishna went to Prabhupada with the
who turned back. So you're saying that Krishna spoke to Uddhava previously. Oh yes, yeah. Before yes, that's right. Uddhava left before the Yadus went to Prabhashetra because Krishna, as described in the third canto, Krishna didn't want him to be distressed by that circumstances.
Yes.
Yes. But why did Uddhava leave? Because Krishna had spoken to him.
What's that?
Yes, I understand that. Yeah. Here, it seems to be saying that Krishna spoke to the demigods, he spoke to the Yadus, and even in the purport here, it's saying that then Uddhava is repeating what Krishna said to the Yadus. So this conversation must have taken place after Krishna spoke to the Yadus. See, because actually, you know, one, in text 41 it says that upon seeing the imminent departure of the Yadus, and hearing from them of the Lord's instructions. So the Lord has already instructed the Yadus, and Uddhava has then heard from them. And even in the purport to text 42, Uddhava repeats those instructions. So you've said this to the Yadus, but I think you've got some other intention. Alright? So, then we hear that Krishna, after my understanding is that after his discussion from chapter 7 to 29, that is the answer to this question of Uddhava, then Uddhava sets off to Badarikasram, as you say. Then, as described in the third canto, he couldn't leave Krishna, so he did came back. But when he came back, the Yadus, of course, had already gone to Prabhashetra and been annihilated. And then he met Krishna alone. You see? What's that?
Krishna was sitting on a tree.
Yes. Then he spoke for the second time. He gave him final instructions, and then Uddhava then went back to Badarikasram. What's that? What's that? That is a fact. That's a fact. The content is very important. At the same time, we also have to understand, what is actually being stated in the Bhagavatam. For instance, in the Krishna book, Sukadeva Goswami tells the story of the Krishna going to Hastinapur. He tells the story twice. In his ecstasy, he actually tells the story a little out of sequence. It's described that if you read the pastime of Krishna and Arjuna meeting the Jamuna. So the Acharyas actually comment that, you know, in Sukadeva Goswami's ecstasy, he's actually brought up that story again, even though that actually it was out of sequence with what he was discussing then, but he actually related it again. So sometimes that does happen, therefore the acharyas, you know, point that out. So again, the point I'm making is that Krishna spoke to the Yadavas, then he spoke to Uddhava. Uddhava then returned after the annihilation of Prabhashetra, right? So, which is what you're, you know, that's, so Krishna spoke to Uddhava twice. I'm just saying, but if in the summary, that's all, although it's not actually stated in the verses, Sukadeva Goswami goes into the description, but in the summary it changes the order that Krishna spoke to the Yadus after Uddhava had left. But it's very clearly stated here, you know, in the purport, in the verse, that it was that he spoke to Uddhava after he spoke to the Yadus. Does anyone have, anyone have, because sometimes someone might have heard something to explain that. Anyway, it's just something to keep in mind. But as I said, because the story is over 30 chapters, sometimes they become very hard to follow, as you can see by the questions asked before I started class. No one was quite sure who was talking, and no one was quite sure who that person was talking to, because after, you know, several verses and several classes, many things are discussed, and yet the main story can get completely lost. So for instance, if we were telling this story, say one of your children asked you, tell me the story of you know, the annihilation of the Yadu dynasty, and then you begin to tell the story, and then all of a sudden you think, oh, no, Krishna said, oh no, he said to them, oh, I don't know. You couldn't even tell a child, I mean, you know what I mean? So even just to tell the basic story, we have to have that understanding. A child doesn't want to hear our philosophical dissertations, they'd like to hear the basic story. So we quite often with guests, we don't tell a lot of the philosophy, you know, each and every verse. We just, if we can just peg out the main story, it's actually quite important, you know, tell a Krishna story. And, I think so. Well, you know, sometimes these things happen. I remember one time my spiritual master gave a class to Indra Juma Swami, and he told this beautiful class about how Srinivasacharya, his life and pastimes, and how he trying to get the association of various devotees and the Lord, that every time he went to get their association, they had just passed away, and then he went to get, you know, Lord Chaitanya's association. Every time he went to get someone's association, they passed away. So it was a beautiful story, and it was his whole book. At the end of the class, I put my hand up and asked a question. I said, well, I've just read in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that's about a conversation with Srinivas and I think it was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and yet you're saying that they've never met, but I've just read it in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which of course just made his class look, you know, he wasn't very happy with me. I'll tell you that. He didn't speak to me for a few days, you know, because I actually brought that up, and I sort of went to try and explain and talk about it, but he didn't even want to, you know, keep away from me younger. But what I realised after thorough research was that there was actually a misprint, and instead of putting Srivas the core, they put Srinivas the core. Now they're two different personalities. So Srivas the core did speak to certain personalities, where Srinivas didn't. But there was actually a misprint in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and therefore they had to, you know, they've actually put out a new Chaitanya Charitamrita, and all the purports and those misprints have been corrected, as far as I understand. Yeah. Anyway, Prabhupada said we should know these books by, like, law books. So I was just bringing it up for discussion. Yep. Another point I'd like to bring up, just for discussion, is that anyway, if someone ever hears, you know, some answer to that, I'd be interested to know, so I can sleep well at night. Another very interesting thing here, of course, is that we hear that the Yadus went to Prabhashetra, and in the previous verse, which I think perhaps Nanda may have spoke on, it describes that not all of the Yadus went to Prabhashetra, that the Krishna actually sent the Sadhana Siddhas to Prabhashetra, whereas the Nitya Siddhas, they remained, and that's also described in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. That, and in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in canto 3, chapter 26, Prabhupada describes that actually the Nitya Siddha devotees, they're not very interested in giving up their service in order to travel to the holy dham, because they're always feel that they're rendering a very important for the Supreme Lord wherever they happen to be. And the Nitya Siddha devotees, they're not very interested in going to places of pilgrimage and performing various sacrifices if it interferes with their service. And he actually quotes a verse by Narottam Das Thakur, where Narottam Das Thakur says it's actually a symptom of illusion. In this age of Kali, to travel to the holy places, for a lot of people, when they actually travel to the holy dham, they're doing it while they're influenced by some degree of illusion. Which again is a very controversial statement. I know over many, many years I've sort of always tried to understand, you know, such a radical statement, because as we know, there are many, many, many different glorifications and recommendations for travelling to various holy dhams and performing, you know, particular activities there. But the point that he is making is that if the Nitya Siddhas, they didn't actually go to Prabhashetra, because they understood, they weren't in any illusion, they understood we're here serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Why would we interrupt that to do something else? So whereas as Prabhupada describes, many demigods had actually taken birth in the families and as families and relatives and friends of the Yadus, and they lived with Krishna, but there was still some, you know, attraction to fruitive activities and philosophical speculation. That they actually weren't ready to go back to Godhead, right? As you probably discussed that the other day. And therefore, of course, anyone who dies in the holy dham, they go back to Godhead, but they actually weren't ready. So therefore Krishna arranged that they leave the holy dham, and they had that propensity, and they were quite happy to perform you know, particular other activities, even though it may have been you know, not as a direct service as what they perhaps could have done if they stayed, you know, and associated with the Lord as they were, just, you know. So in that way there can be, you know, also, as Srila Prabhupada mentions, that he says that all over the world we have different temples, you know, London, Paris, he mentions this in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And in these various temples, he says, actually the devotees that live in all these temples, they live nowhere else but Vrindavan. So, again, you know, Srila Prabhupada recommended that all the devotees, they, every year they go to the Holy Dham and they take the association of the devotees there and take the benefit of the Holy Dham, Vrindavan and Mayapur. At the same time, for a devotee who's actually, you know, on the absolute plane, there's Krishna right there. He is right there. And there's Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So there's Navadvipa, and there's Vrindavan, and there's Jagannath Puri. So, he's very, very generous. So, of course, I'm not saying, I'm just trying to discuss Narottam Das Thakur's, you know, statement that in one sense in the age of Kali, he recommends don't go to the holy places, because most people in their travels to the holy places, they're actually going with some sort of illusion, and it's a manifestation, not of their pure devotion, but a manifestation of their illusion in some cases. But those devotees who, of course, appreciate, you know, that Krishna is in here, that Vrindavan, this Melbourne temple is non-different from Vrindavan, is non-different from Mayapur, Jagannath Puri, they may also go to associate with the devotees in those places of Vrindavan and Mayapur and relish, you know, the birthplace. So there is unlimited variety, but for them, they also, whether they stay or go, they're actually in Vrindavan. That's the point. You know, if that, like for Srila Prabhupada, if he was in Moscow, if there was a temple there, even if there wasn't a temple, if he was chanting Hare Krishna, then Krishna was there. When he went to Moscow, he was in Vrindavan. If he went to Tehran, he was in Vrindavan. When he went to Vrindavan, he was in Vrindavan. Okay. So, but anyway, these, you know, the ones who weren't ready to go back to Godhead, they went to Prabhakshetra, and actually the others, the Nichasiddhas, remained in Dwarka. So, you know, this is the inconceivable, as described in the purport. This purport here, that text number 41. So now we'll get into a bit of the content and keep everyone happy. That the disasters apparently occurring in Dwarka were an external show created by the Lord to facilitate his pastimes. We can understand the pastimes of Krishna only by hearing from the recognized acharyas. It says, Lord Krishna's pastimes are an exhibition of his achintya shakti, or inconceivable potency, which functions according to higher spiritual laws unknown to the blind conditioned souls and their petty material logic. We have to be very, very careful in trying to understand scripture, or understanding the pastimes of Krishna, or anything, just through logic. It actually has to be understood by the acharyas, and if it's not understood by the acharyas, by the mercy of Krishna, then it cannot be understood. Um, actually, there's a story of Śrīla Viśvanātha Chakravarti Thakura, who, when he was writing a commentary on the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and in that commentary, Śrīla Kṛṣṇadās Kaviraj Goswami described that there are 24 and a half, Krishna's, you know, body can be symbolized by 24 and a half moons, and that is also, and that corresponds to the 24 and a half syllables in the Gayatri Mantra, the particular Gayatri Mantra. So when Śrīla Viśvanātha Chakravarti Thakura was counting the syllables in the Gayatri Mantra, he understood that there was, I think I've got it right, that there was 25. So he thought, so now I have found fault with the Acharyas, because I cannot see how they've come to the conclusion, and I'm coming to a different conclusion, so I will now fast until death. And so he sat and he decided, because rather than have the thought in his head that he had contradicted the Acharyas, and yet he couldn't understand how he got to that conclusion, he thought, now I will fast to death. My life is useless because I am an offender. So while he was fasting all through the night, he fasted a long time, and then Śrīmati Radharani appeared to him, and she said to him, if you read such and such a book written by such and such an Acharya, you will see that he gives an explanation on the Gayatri Mantra, and there that will answer your question. So he woke from his trance, he went and he searched out that book, and there the Acharya, you know, he found the book, as Śrīmati Radharani said, written by this Acharya, the commentary on the Gayatri Mantra, and there he found that a certain syllable which ends one word, when followed by another syllable which follows, which starts another word, joins to become one symbol. And anyway, very technical Sanskrit sort of, but what happened, you know, is he realized that actually Kṛṣṇadās Kaviraj Goswami was actually correct. That, you know, and therefore he continued on, you know, with his commentary. But it sort of shows, you know, how carefully we should study. You know, this is, you know, he was prepared to die for half a syllable. But, you know, it's important to understand that, you know, there's always an explanation as to exactly what is stated, and, you know, it's good to find out, to research, and not just to, you know, just you know, not understanding something, or think, you know, something, or have some offensive mentality towards, you know, a greater charge. We have to be very careful of that. But at the same time, we should, you know, somehow or another, question, research, pray to the Lord that we can properly understand what is there. The devotees of the Lord, the Lord's holy Dharma, the Srimad Bhagavatam, all the transcendental literatures, everything about the Lord is inconceivable. Just like today, of course, is the disappearance day, I think, of Srila Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. And he also was, you know, performed many inconceivable activities, obviously, you know, empowered by Krishna's achintya shakti, as all the devotees are. Jagannath Das Babaji, of course, lived somewhere between about 130 and 146 years old. You know, he was very, very old. And when he was very, very old, of course, he was, blind to some degree. I'm not sure if he was totally blind. He was pretty much an invalid. He used to, one of his disciples, Sri Bihari Das, used to carry him in a basket on his shoulders. And so he was all hunched up in a basket. And he would, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur had been searching for the actual birth site of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the yoga pit, the birth site. And he, through looking at very old maps and different shastras and scriptures and histories, he understood, where he thought it was, and there were particular visions that he had, and he understood that this, appears to be the site. The name had changed to Mirpur or something. There was the Muslim, a lot of Muslims were living there. So he took Jagannath Das Babaji, who at that stage was very, very, very old, over 100 years old. And he took him there in his little basket. Bihari was carrying him in his little basket. And when he got there and he understood, yes, this is the place of, Navadvip Dham, then he merely jumped out of that basket and, stretched out to over 6 feet tall and started dancing wildly, like a young bhakta. Not Prabhu here. And so he was like that, although quite often, not just then, but actually many times, although he's very, very elderly, and he was carried in a basket, but sometimes if they would come across devotees having ecstatic kirtan, he would just leap out of that basket, and just stretch right out, really, really tall, and he'd just dance and dance and dance. And he was, one time, again, the inconceivable Shakti of Krishna's devotees, one time he was in Mayapur, or Kulia. He spent 50 years chanting and serving in Vrindavan, and in one stretch, and he spent 32 years in Kulia, around Mayapur area, and then other times he would spend 6 months in either Vrindavan or Mayapur. And one time he was in Mayapur, and some people came to, they'd heard he was a very elevated saintly person, and they wanted to see, they wanted to see if he could do something to show, that he was, a Siddha Baba, because everyone understood that he was completely perfected on the spiritual platform, Siddha Baba. So he started beating the ground with a stick, and then the people thought, oh, we've upset him. And they said, sorry, Babaji, we were just, we've come here, we've disturbed you, we've asked you something. Not very good. He said, no, I'm just chasing away a goat that is trying to ruin the Tulsi plant in Vrindavan, in I think Narottam Das Thakur's Samadhi. And so those people there, they actually went and immediately sent a telegram, a reply paid telegram, and the next day they got a reply from Vrindavan saying that yes, indeed, a goat had actually gone into Narottam Das Thakur's Samadhi and partially ruined the Tulsi bush there. So Jagannath Das Babaji in Mayapur, is hundreds of miles away, he's beating in the ground, chasing this goat away from Vrindavan. Which again, proves Prabhupada's point as what we're saying, that on that, you know, that's inconceivable. Right? How can you be hundreds of miles away and doing something else? You know, you're sitting there and then you're chasing away a goat hundreds of miles away. That proves that Mayapur and Vrindavan are non-different. Doesn't it? And as Prabhupada said, if you're in Melbourne, if you're in one of the ISKCON temples around the world, it's non-different. The devotees are living in Vrindavan. Now, because of our illusion, we can't perceive that. But that is the achincha shakti of the Lord. But the nitya siddhas, the perfected, you know, devotees, they can actually perceive that these are not just statements that have no real, truth. You know, they're non-different. And on the spiritual platform, you can actually, realize that. So, so Jagannath Das Babaji, he was just a little bit more about Jagannath Das Babaji. He was he came in the line after Baladev Vidyavasan. So Baladev Vidyavasan had initiated a disciple called, I think it was Bhagavat Das Babaji. No, Uddhava Das Babaji. And then his disciple was, Jagananda Babaji. Srila Jagannath Das Babaji, so was a disciple of, he took Babaji. Right? So Srila Baladev Vidyavasan's grand disciple was the Babaji guru of Srila Jagannath Das Babaji. Jagannath Das Babaji, he had many disciples, of which Srila Bhagavat Das Babaji was one of his favourite disciples. And Srila Gaura Kishore Das Babaji, he took Shiksha, I think it was, from him. So that is our line coming down like that. So from Baladev Vidyavasan, there's two acharyas, then Jagannath Das Babaji, and one acharya, and then there's Guru Kishore Das Babaji, like that. And Jagannath Das Babaji also used to give instruction to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur actually went and visited him in Vrindavan, and he also visited Jagannath Das Babaji in Jagannath Das Babaji used to visit him when they were in Mayapur. And Jagannath Das Babaji also gave instructions to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So actually Srila Jagannath Das Babaji, because he lived so long, he gave instructions to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, to Srila Gaura Kishore Das Babaji, and to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He actually asked Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur to compile the Vaishnava calendar. Someone asked me the other day, where do we get our Vaishnava calendar? That was from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati on the instructions of Srila Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, of course, being the greatest, I think he got that instruction, he was probably about even 12. Even at the age of 12, he was like a recognized one of the greatest scholars in astrology. You know, so I it took him a few years. He travelled all over India with his father, and then he, you know, gathered information about all the saintly personalities, and with his astronomical and astrological understanding, he then compiled the, you know, Vaishnava calendar as we know it. And again, you know, other different pastimes of Srila Jagannath Das Babaji. He had one disciple, I think it was Bihari, and he was illiterate. He couldn't, you know, read or write. So one day Jagannath Das Babaji, he said, "I want you to read this sastra to me." And he said, "Oh, you know, Guru Maharaj, you remember I can't read, I have no idea." He said, "No, you just read it." So immediately he began to read, and then he just automatically could read. So from not recognizing a word or a letter or anything, and then Jagannath Das Babaji said, "You just read it to me." And then he just immediately started reading. And another time, that Bihari Das, he was very, very, he became so ill that practically he was going to die. And Srila Jagannath Das Babaji, he sat and he put some tulsi leaves on his lip, I think it was, and then he just chanted. And he just chanted and chanted. And then by that chanting, then Bihari, just after, you know, his fever broke, and then he just woke up, and then he just immediately went in and started cooking for Jagannath Das Babaji. You know, he just immediately got up and started cooking, because Jagannath Das Babaji wouldn't eat until, you know, anything that if it wasn't cooked by him, he wouldn't eat it. He woke up and he said, "Oh, you know, he mustn't have eaten yet," so he just immediately started cooking. Another time, you know, Jagannath Das Babaji was, you know, he was being carried along in his basket by Bihari Das, and a grihastha offered, you know, a rupee. Seeing a sadhu came by, he gave him a rupee, and then he walked off. So they went in opposite directions, and then after, you know, they'd walked about, you know, so many hundred yards or what have you, Jagannath Das Babaji said, "Turn around and go back." And he went back and he took that rupee and he gave it back to the man. He said, I couldn't even carry that rupee more than a mile." He said, "I can't understand how you can bear the weight of all your wealth." So of course, you know, Jagannath Das Babaji, he would accept charity. But in this occasion, he chose to give instruction to be very, very careful of, you know, devotees have to be very, very careful of accepting, you know, charity from materialistic people. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains that also in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It does, you know, make it difficult to think of Krishna. So, you know, Jagannath Das Babaji was giving that instruction. So Jagannath Das Babaji, although again, you know, he couldn't see very well, and Bihari used to gather all the donations, and then you know, Jagannath Das Babaji used to spend that according to how he wanted. But Bihari Das was always trying to just keep a little aside, not for himself, no, for his guru, because he knew that, you know, his guru would spend it in all sorts of different ways and not keep anything, nothing at all for himself. So he was trying to, you know, put a little bit aside, and then, you know, maybe, you know, I can get him this and that and what have you. And then, but he would know it. And Jagannath Das Babaji, you know, so, you know, even though he's a, you know, a saintly person, absorbed in, you know, always chanting, he would chant for days on end. But, you know, he would know the money, you know, the money's not adding up. And he would come here, count it, like this. And then he would say, "There's something missing," you put it back, like that. And he would put his money back. But, and then he would take that money and he would spend it, you know, one time he spent you know, over 200 rupees, which probably today would be $20,000 or something, you know, ridiculous. A lot of money, you know, it's at least $2,000. He spent that on rasgullas for the cows in the dam. So they all got rasgullas. And you know, he again, it shows you his appreciation of the dam. You know, not to see it in the material way. In the same way, we shouldn't see Melbourne Temple in the material world, in a material way. You know, it is dumb. And you know, one time, some, you know, especially, you know, with regards to the plants and the animals that actually come here, we have to have a little extra consideration and respect because they're in this dharma. You know, somehow or another they have a connection with Krishna. We have to be very careful, you know, how we treat any of the living entities, especially here. One time he was sitting, he was taking prasadam, and about, you know, this dog had given birth, and some little puppies, there's about five puppies came, and they started looking at his plate, and his servant, you know, took the plate aside, and Jagannath Das Babaji got up and said, "Oh, I'm not eating today." And then he walked off. And then Bihari called him back. He said, "Oh, you know, Gurudev." And then he gave that plate to the dogs, and then he came back and sat and enjoyed, you know, watching the dogs of the dharma eat his prasadam. You know, he was very happy. He was giving so many valuable instructions like that. But he was, of course, he was very, very much absorbed in chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and serving the Vaishnavas. These were the, you know, and serving the Dham. These were the favourite services that he would do. And he would, you know, quite often chant for 3 days continuous without, you know, he would fast and just chant for 3 days. One time he performed this particular austerity where it went for 3 months, and he would chant all day from you know, Brahma Muhurta up to about sunset, and during that time he couldn't utter any other word except the chanting, and he couldn't eat, and if he had to go to the, you know, had the call of nature, he had to take a full bath. Even if he passed wind, he had to take a full bath. Very, very strict. And this was to go on for 3 months. So after 2 months, Bihari came in and he accidentally said a word to him, and so he started again. And it, you know, sometimes I've heard devotees, you know, come up to me and say, "What happens if I'm chanting my rounds and I accidentally drop my beads? Do I just sort of pick them up and start from where I am?" Or, you know, right? So my answer is, you start, at least start that round again. You see Jagannath Das Babaji, you know, he just started the whole thing again for 2 months, and then he completed his 3 months. So this is the dedication to. He said, anyone who actually wants the direct darshan of Krishna, to see Krishna, they should do that. So, you know, towards the last part of his life, Jagannath Das Babaji, he went from Vrindavan and he went to travel down to Mayapur. And actually the residents of Vrindavan, they said to him, you know, Babaji Maharaj, you know, you're leaving Vrindavan. You know, you're so close to leaving this world. Everyone knows that. You know, why would you leave Vrindavan? And he said, "I am actually an offender. I am going to Mayapur because in Vrindavan, all of our offences are counted. But in Mayapur, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he does not count our offences." So, in this way he actually went to Mayapur to spend the last part of his days, and of course that was his humility. But again, he was teaching us a very, you know, important. That's why when devotees generally they go to, you know, overseas, the holy dharms, quite often they go to Mayapur, they get the blessings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They spend a little time in Vrindavan, not too long, because, you know, we're susceptible to being an illusion, we're susceptible to create offences. We should always, you know, think like that. We should always, and here also, even, you know, not even, but here just the same. In Melbourne Temple, we should act as if we're in Vrindavan and be very, very careful, because Krishna is here, and be very, very careful. Always consider ourselves very fortunate and, you know, prone to be in some sort of illusion, prone to be, you know, in some sort of ignorance, prone to commit some offences. If we think like that, it keeps us protected. If we ever feel, you know, it's just, you know, pop into the temple, you know, it's just like a, you know, a Sunday outing, and, you know, we forget that, you know, that Krishna is here, we forget that, it's very easy to commit offences. And in our association with devotees, again, you know, devotees are inconceivable. Even as, you know, has been described, the devotees, even on the beginning platform, we have to be very, very careful how we treat them. Because Krishna, they are very, very dear to Krishna. And, you know, sometimes, as described, that Krishna will actually give even, you know, more mercy to the new devotees. You know, he's more merciful than, you know, some of the old devotees, because they're more dependent. Just like a parent will look after their, you know, a more dependent child who needs the help from their parents more, they'll actually give them more attention. So we should always be very careful of our association with the devotees. Whether they're advanced devotees or young devotees, they're under the protection of Krishna's achintya shakti. Everything they do is not something which it should be seen in light of spiritual understanding and not in light of, you know, materialistic logic. If we start to see things, the Melbourne Temple, the devotees, the scriptures, the guru, you know, our service in terms of material logic, will immediately create some offence. And this is, again, some very nice instructions given by Srila Jagannath Das Babaji. And we can associate with each other like he associated with his dear friends. One time when he was actually travelling from Vrindavan to Mayapur, he came across another Babaji who is a very dear friend of his, and then they just embraced and they rolled around on the ground, you know, for ages, embracing, and they just rolled on the ground, embracing, hugging each other. They were so happy to see each other, and then they were in such ecstasy, they just went into this trance. Now this is like 10 a.m. they met each other. 11 p.m. at night, they're still lying on the ground, embracing, just in trance. And then, you know, Bihari is massaging his chest, and, you know, because he was worried that, you know, he hadn't eaten. Because he would fast while he was travelling, so he hadn't eaten for a long time. He's worried. So he brought him back to consciousness. But, you know, if we can associate with the devotees like that, associate with the Lord like that, have that respect for Melbourne Temple, take this opportunity from Jagannath Das Babaji to understand how much nectar we have, then he will be very happy, and of course he will give us his full blessings. Jai. If there's any quick questions or comments, no? Jai. All glories to the Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj.